Thank you for joining me for another webcast. This is the 30th of December, 2011. The year is almost up. I'm Pastor John in the Lucy Coleman Studio in Los Angeles, California. Thank you for joining me for another very interesting webcast. I'm so glad that you can join me today. What I'd like to do is I'd like to talk with you a little bit about the very rich and beautiful heritage and history of the African-American community in this country and the rich Christian background of that culture, of that heritage. I'm talking about biblical Christianity, given in the real. I was on my Facebook and I came across Kevin's Facebook page, and he was pointing out to me, it was just wonderful. He was pointing out to me a website where many African-American historical things have been documented, pictures back in the day, the Booker T. Washington and the Institute there, and all of the historical accounts. And I've just been browsing over that this morning here in the office before I began my work. And I said, well, now, what can I talk about today that's going to really stimulate some interest, not only for the black community as well, but for the white community also? Because I saw, what would they call, if I can recall, go back over my mind, they had training classes and institutions where they were training young black women to be housewives and mothers, how to care for the home, how to care for the children. And it was amazing because it brought back memories, quaint memories indeed, when I was raised by my grandmother. Some of these women dressed the way my grandmother used to dress back in the day. Wow, I remember, because I was born in 1944, and so obviously my grandmother was around in the 20s or before that. And then her mother before that. And when you look at these cultures that were passed on, and these Christian ideas, you know, of hard work, rugged individualism, that kind of situation was passed on to us children. And it made for a very prosperous life. It's the reason that I am the way that I am today. I have to come against those naysayers that don't know anything about their history, and then would fondly find themselves constantly speaking negatively about someone else's history or our culture. We as black people in this country have had a rich culture of education, intelligence, good inbreeding, unlike the people that push the eugenics movement, thinks that our breeding and spawning children is something. No. Great heritage of people that have contributed not only to this country, but to the world. I think some fantastic achievements and accomplishments. I was on the website, and I guess I better stop playing and move my computer over here and share with you the website that I'm talking about, because it won't do me any good to talk about it and not to be able to share it with you. So I just had to pull one computer over here, and let me adjust my mic a little bit. Okay, here we go. Let me go back up to the up to the top of this thing here, because I want to let you know what website I'm talking about, and I want to thank you, Kevin. It's called Documenting the American South. That's what you would type in your browser. It has some of the collections here. It talks about the church in the Southern Black community. Traces the way the Southern African Americans adopted and transformed Protestant Christianity into the central institution of community life. I mean, this is, these are some of the things. And then it has another one, the colonial state and state records of North Carolina, the first century of the First State University. I mean, it's whites and blacks alike. They have, man, listen, the North American slave narratives, documents, which are collective stories of African-American struggle for freedom, human rights in the 18th and 19th centuries. And of course, you know, when you tap into that, it, you know, you can browse the collections and they have just a masterful list of authors here, and that you can read about these things, read up on the culture, and come to know that. And I'm just scrolling down. I'm going to look for someone that maybe has my name in there. Okay, no, there's no Colemans, but I'm sure that if I keep looking, I'll find something. Here's one. It says, Noah Davis, a narrative of the life of Reverend Noah Davis, a colored man, written by himself. And then when I tap into that, it has a great image. Just some great stuff. See, now I found this website thanks to Kevin Oliver, and I'm going to be putting up a lot of these ancient pictures and things like that on my website because I think that we need to spread these ideas. I'm just learning of the website. Here I am teaching philosophy and all of that. But here, this winter break session, I'm in my office and I'm literally taking time, okay, to do some reading, to do some research. My goodness, Freedman in Maryland, a narrative of the life of the laborers of, oh man, just a great little book. Great little book, Reverend G.W. Offley, A Colored Man. This is interesting. And the list of illustrations in the book, just excellent writings. And the historical context, the people that put this website together, it's just wonderful. So I admonish you to go there, documenting the American South. It would really do you well to look at the pictures, to read some of the narratives themselves. Doctrines and Disciplines of the African Methodist Episcopal Church. This is something because when once you look into that, you can see what the disciplines are all about and all of that. Here's one document that was published in 1817, the Doctrines and Discipline of the African Methodist Episcopal Church was the first discipline published by the African Methodist Episcopal, that is the AME Church. It is but a small but definitive guide to the history, the beliefs, and the practices of the early church. So if you really want to know where all that got started, you can go there. They talk about sacraments, baptism, Lord's Supper, marriage, church ceremonies, and all of that. And, you know, that brings me vivid memories when I was a member of the little small Olivet Baptist Church, which was a little bakery on 35th Street in Los Angeles. It wasn't facing Jefferson. It was a bakery, an old bakery. And that's what they did is they went in there and they bought the bakery, converted it into a church. A couple of families financed it and the history of that church, and I was its last pastor until it fell into, I guess I'm as high as it went. So you can follow the history of not only this church, but the history of many other churches. And a great, like I said, just a great little website for you to look into. To historically, look at this, man. They have the Encyclopedia of the Colored Baptists of Alabama. Now, that should be interesting because if I look at this, Charles Octavius Booth, 1845, they have a picture of him here. And, you know, just to think that these people are long dead and they didn't have the tape recorders and the things that we have to record history now, because someone obviously long after I'm dead will be able to look into this and listen and to see whether what I was talking about was legitimate or not. See, this is what makes this a great historical thing right here. And the church in the Southern Black community, I mean, all of this, you can browse the images and the subjects of it. Man, it's just a great website. So I admonish you to go there. I'm looking for African-American Church in California. See, I'm going to spend more time looking at this because I want to discover more about the culture that I come from. I'm writing a book right now, and finally, I was telling you a couple of days ago that I was thinking about putting all of my thoughts and memoirs and everything together in this book called Feeling the Tension. And I began to write it in 1995. I tucked it away, had it on a couple of computer hard drives, dug them out, found it, and just going over it when I get a chance to sit down and read. I'm still adding more. My daughter sent me another one of those little journals to write in, and so every day I got up this morning, I went to one of my favorite restaurants, The Serving Spoon in Englewood, and had breakfast, and I was writing in today's journal how I feel. And thinking about New Year's Eve, and quite naturally looked up a picture of my late wife and put it up on my website. I can't think of New Year's Eve with anyone else. Anything else is crass. I'm to the point now, and want to talk with some of you more senior Christians out there. You know, when you've grown up and you've had a life, you've, as Mario would tell me, if you've paid your dues, your hair is rightly turned gray, you have a right to ride around in that little car and enjoy the way it feels without worrying about how you're going to pay the note on it for the next month, because you've earned the right to do so. You've survived all of that. And when I look back at this ancient website of these ancient pictures and see all this stuff, and then I think about the history of where I am and how God has brought me this far, it really blesses my heart to be here. And I'm glad that you can be here with me enjoying these things. We should enjoy ourselves, enjoy our culture, enjoy our lives. The Lord Jesus, as a matter of fact, I'm going to talk about it because I don't get a chance to really speak about it that often. So let me turn that off. I really don't get a chance to speak about it often. So let's go to John, and I'd like to go to John chapter 2. We're going to go to the wedding at Cana in Galilee. And we're going to check this out. And the marriage in Cana, the site of Cana was not certainly known. A lot of people think that it was in the ruins now called K-A-N-A, Cana, 12 miles north of Nazareth. But there was a wedding in Cana, and Jesus' mother was there. It says, on the third day, there was a marriage in Cana in Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. All right, now, we want to look at this, and let's talk about this. Because Jesus was also there, obviously, and there's where he did the first miracle of turning the water into wine. And so what I'd like to know, and, you know, I want to look a little bit closer to this. and see what relations I can get out of this instead of making up my own mind. It was the third day, okay? The third day of what? Well, you have to go back up to John chapter 1, all right? And then you will find out what that is all about. So after the events recorded in the last chapter, Cana in Galilee, there was a town west of the Sea of Galilee, a few miles north of Nazareth, so-called, distinguish it from Cana near Sinai. So on that day, we're going to see what took place there, and we're going to join this marriage party. Okay, the site of Cana is not certainly known. The mother of Jesus was there. Reason suggesting for this is because they believed that in some kind of way Mary was related to someone in the family there, as Joseph is never mentioning as living after Jesus entered upon his ministry. A lot of people believe that by this time Joseph had passed away. We don't know why or what, but you know, that's indicative of the family not having a man at the head of the house. But Mary obviously was a resilient woman and very well loved by the people in the community. So she's invited to the wedding. Jesus was also invited to the marriage, we see in verse 2, with his disciples. Now, this is very interesting as we go to verse 2, because we would wonder why. You know, there are several remarkable circumstances that we want to look at here. Because we see the author of our faith with his disciples, and probably then it was only about four in number, if you really want to look at that. Because, see, a lot of people think that all 12 disciples showed up. But if you go to John chapter 1, verse 37, it says, the two disciples heard him say this, and they followed Jesus. Okay, in John chapter 1. And so we aren't necessarily, if you want to, you know, get technical with that and believe that it was all 12 of them, I think you're stretching that. You're stretching that a little bit. Okay, so we don't want to do that. And we also note that this was the first miracle that Jesus ever did recorded in the Bible in John chapter 2. Now, as we look at verse 3, it says, and when the wine failed, the mother of Jesus said to him, now you may be saying, well, what do you mean when the wine failed? You're talking about when the wine failed. What do you mean the wine failed? Yes. When the wine ran out. When the happy juice ran out. In the revised revision, it says when the wine fell. For some cause, perhaps there was a lot of people there. That was not expected. The wine gave out. And you have to understand the Eastern culture as opposed to our Western culture here, where hospitality is so lavish that this would have been a mortifying experience. You're going to a wedding and there's no wine. So the mother of Jesus said to him, they have no wine. Now, this solicitude of Mary, this author says, could hardly be expected from one that is not a relative. But why did she appeal to Jesus in the first place? In part because it was very natural for her to speak to him in her perplexity, because she was perplexed, the wine had given out. And in part likewise because she hoped that he would meet the difficulty of the situation at that time. Now, verse 4, it says, and Jesus said to her, O woman, what have you to do with me? Now, this is difficult for some people to understand. We don't like to look at this, or we don't like to look at it within the context of what it is really saying. And there has been so much controversy over this approach that Jesus took to the woman, and And I have to admit, I have to watch myself, because if I'm not careful, people can misrepresent or misinterpret what I say by the terms that I use when I speak of women. These words in our language sound harsh and almost rude that Jesus uttered here when he renders the Greek term gune, which is rendered woman. It was respectful and gentle. But this language partly is a rebuke to Mary, shows very plainly that the fiction of the Catholic Church of Mary being immaculate or the Queen of Heaven and the Mother of God is just nonsense. Because here we see Jesus speaking to her in this tone. And this in the language has the tone of, she was a handmaiden. She wasn't this aura person of heaven that had this eternal halo around her head. No, the bong goes off because the language doesn't attest to that. And after she speaks to him, he says, mine hour has not yet come. The hour of his full manifestation is what he's talking about. The hour of him revealing himself to Israel, what his purpose was, had not come. And so, of course, Mary, his mother, responds in verse 5 and says to the servants, because these were people of class, they had money, and she said to them, do whatever he tells you. Now, I could have spent a little bit more time on that, but I didn't want to do that. But it is evident from this verse that the mother did not understand what Jesus had just said to her to be a harsh reproof or a repulse. But we see by Mary's action here, there was an indication of his willingness at the very proper time to furnish some more wine. But in this transaction, you can see some appreciated feelings of a son towards the mother and vice versa. I'm thinking about today, if a mother would be at something like that and she'd go to the son and say, boy, go to the store and get some wine. I'm not going nowhere. You can't make me go get any wine. I'm not going to get any wine for these people. See what I mean? See the difference? Total respectful. Not speaking in a bougie kind of a way, because I know that there are bougie weddings and bougie families, people that are up to da. Oh, we have no wine. How embarrassing. I don't mean that. I meant that there was a human respect. And I believe in this day and age, we've lost somewhat that respect. We've lost it. And what we need to do is we need to recapture that. So his mother says, whatever he does tell you, you do that. You just, respond within that. We also understand from this that she evidently understood from the manner of the words of his reply that he would relieve the difficulty. She was his mother, though she was not the queen of heaven. Whatever he says to you, do it. Okay, this is in the indefinite relative sentence, hata'an, and it's in the present active subjective, though a general statement, with the aorist active imperative of puio for instant execution. In other words, she's saying Mary took comfort in the not yet, I'm not going to do it right now, but she understood the interdependence of her, though she expected him to carry out the suggestion ultimately as he did. In other words, the mother knew her son. Once you see all of these things just in these five verses alone, the Bible is a marvelous book. A marvelous book, my friends. And when you find yourself becoming bored And you say, you know, I'm bored. I don't have anything to do, man. Just pick up the book and read it. The Bible is a powerful, powerful testimony. A very powerful book. And it would do us well to pick up the pages and read through it. And so, you know, once you look at this relationship between a mother and her son, Jesus and Mary, his mother, you can, you know, though he had spoken words of rebuke, his mother was neither offended or discouraged because of those words. And then she responds in a beautiful way. She commands unlimited obedience from the servant. Through her words, though her words are not addressed to us, they will prove to untold profit to us if we obey them. Do you see the disposition or the particular attitude that is put forth by the person of Mary in this particular text? And all of this in the beloved Word of God for us to glean these beautiful, beautiful truths. I am never so amazed at how wonderful God has implanted the human exchange on how we are to respond with one another, and how that response will work for all of our benefits. That's what I'm loving about this entire reading of the scriptures of the Word of God. Well, we're going to take a little break right now, and then we'll be back with a little bit more of these insights from the Bible. You're listening to Pastor John here in Los Angeles in the Lucy Coleman Studio, Ram Radio, the webcast, which is the biblical alternative.